Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, so we are talking January stuff. As we record this, our Reading with Rogues with Star Wars is happening tonight.
Yep.
So if you're listening to this now, you missed it.
Travel back in time. It was super fun.
It was super great, I'm sure. although I can't believe Nick got so drunk and punched the bartender.
You know, it's funny.
I can believe it. I really do believe it.
I still need to finish reading it. In the future, I will have read it.
Yes.
But as of right now, in our time, I have not finished reading it yet, but I'm having a really good time revisiting it.
I reread it last night. It holds up really well.
I missed that there was not enough lightsabers.
Vader goes up against an AT.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that?
Yep. Then Ladies' Night is, as you hear this, tonight, Wednesday the 13th. Our Gaming with Rogues is next week on Monday the 18th. That is at Lamppost Coffee. That's going to be Machi Koro. And then the Sunday before that is our Oath of the Gatewatch pre-release for Magic.
Yes.
Still got some room if you have an interest in coming out for that. There's one at 12 and one at 4. And then as of today, we've decided our next Reading with Rogues, which is going to be next month, Tuesday, February 9th. We have not discussed a place yet. We'll have that next time.
Yep.
But we're going to do Preacher Volume 1.
Yep. The beloved hit of the 90s, the single most foul-mouthed comic I've ever read.
Yep, probably.
And also profane.
Yep.
Honestly, profane in all senses of the word, but also like in all the best ways. When I read it back in the day, it was sort of like Pulp Fiction meets theological craziness in the South.
Yeah.
And like you were noting,
specifically in Texas,
there is a love story interwoven in there. It's a twisted love story at times.
It's a pretty straightforward love story. It's just
but
got
she's
some.
A hit, she's a hit woman, though.
Sure. Yeah. But
there's also a vampire involved.
There's a vampire. So yeah, it's a good fit for February because it is a love story,
right? But a lot of people know Preacher by reputation. You probably have a friend who's told you it's the best comic there is.
Or you may have heard that there's an AMC television show about to start.
Right,
yes.
Which is sure to rile up everybody. As we already know, it's going to be kind of crazy different.
It's very different.
So here's your chance to see what the real deal is and see what your friend is who says it's the best comic there ever was,
yep.
What he's talking about.
Yep. All right. Lots of news this week, so we're going to jump right to it. First, there's the new trailer from Netflix for Baz Luhrmann's TV show, The Get Down.
Yeah, this is probably going to... I don't think it was like a big, huge, like, everybody check this out, but it popped for us, and
yep.
It looks really cool to me.
It looks great.
It's a really catchy trailer, so you should probably just go watch it.
Yeah, it seems to be about the birth of hip-hop in the 70s in the Bronx.
Yeah.
And it's sort of about, you know, Baz Luhrmann's thing, so it's like lots of singing, lots of dancing.
Yeah.
It looks more 70s than I'm used to him looking. It looks more period piece.
Well, yeah, I think even Romeo and Juliet, Randy, when you get around to that, there's a little streak of 70s kind of aesthetic that runs through
West Side Story a little bit.
No, the glam.
Oh,
the
okay.
Glam mixed with the tawdry.
Okay.
It's kind of a thing in all of his stuff. And you know, Moulin Rouge, honestly, had some of it, too.
Sure.
So even though that doesn't strictly look like the 70s, there's no afros in Moulin Rouge, there is a weirdly, the aesthetic does kind of carry
through.
There's
no afros in Great Gatsby, either, but he definitely brings those themes and, you know, his stamp. I mean, he does have a particular stamp, just the sort of look and vibe that he does.
And kind of a high-energy thing,
too. Yeah, very kinetic.
His stuff is always, kinetic.
Well, the trailer has a great look to it. It's going to look beautiful.
This one kind of flew under the radar because I knew nothing about it. And I actually do like Baz Luhrmann. I've seen all of his movies. I think he's extremely talented.
Well, this is the Sizzle trailer. They just revealed this.
Okay. I mean,
it's not coming out until 2016 sometime. We don't know when. So this could be like a September for all we know.
It's true.
I don't think so, but I think it's probably, you know, like not till summer.
And this is Netflix, right?
It's a Netflix original.
What I like is that it looks so different from everything else going on
yeah.
right now. It's an area that, you know, there have been documentaries on and movies that have, you know, woven into that era. But this looks like it's really zeroing in on it. And, again, I think because of his stylish approach, that's really what's fascinating me about it.
I wonder how much Straight Outta Compton influenced the development of this. I feel like it had to have been developed before that. Right. But the success of Straight Outta Compton may have had some of
that. Fast-tracked it.
Yeah, because did you notice Grandmaster Flash is a character?
Yeah. I was not sure. They called him Grandmaster, and I was like, is it actually supposed to be
on his jacket and on the IMDb page, it's Grandmaster Flash. I see that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to be like...
You can't do the Birth of Hip-Hop without Grandmaster Flash.
He was talking to this group of kids as if he was like the sensei.
The Grandmaster sensei, yeah.
Literally like, yeah, like the Grandmaster of the temple and was teaching his wisdom. Now, is that in any way based on like how things actually were, or is this going to be kind of a cool and crazy stylized
now,
reality?
Dave, I know why you'd be asking a 44-year-old white man about the Birth of Hip Hop and what he knows, but I have to say, I don't know. I have no idea.
I do not know, but I feel like it might be sort of Baz Luhrmann.
I love the idea.
I love the idea too.
Yeah, running
too.
With it as with him as the sensei of hip hop.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we'll see. Bad news for Titans fan, or possibly good news for Titans fans.
I think good.
Teen Titans is dead at TNT. They're not going to do it.
I think this just opens up the notion of having maybe Nightwing on Arrow.
Agreed.
Ah, yeah, that'd be sweet.
All those characters are freed up again for the good CW shows. I agree.
Yeah, I was really worried.
Have Starfire show up on Supergirl. I think it'd be perfect.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Starfire on Supergirl would be great.
Yeah, like it would... They could be girlfriends.
Yeah.
I don't mean in the lurid sense.
Yeah.
No, she needs a good friend. She'll be a...
It would actually be perfect. Yeah, she could be... Starfire could even show up, of course, in the tradition of comics as a foe at first.
Yep.
Just kind of desperate to survive, fighting with Kara. Now,
CBS, hello, we're writing it for you.
I think before, I was vaguely thinking, like, Teen Titans, I'm neither here nor there on it.
Yeah.
But then Supergirl came out and ended up being really good.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, they got Flash, they got Arrow, now they got Supergirl, different networks, but overall good track record. Yeah. And so now I don't want this crap-ass Teen Titans to happen.
Yeah, because TNT is not the best with budgets and that kind of thing. No. They did Leverage, which was good.
Yeah, but they haven't done superhero stuff, so I don't think they know the waters as well as, say, CW, who 60% of their television show.
Or CBS, who honestly has the money.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing, is like, if you don't have the experience, you got to have the big budget.
And also, I'm not sure if they were involved, but Greg Berlanti was not involved in...
That's right, and that's a big difference.
And that is a big difference, because he definitely brings sort of, you know, a love of those characters, mm-hmm. but also puts a much-needed spin on it to get new people involved.
Well, Berlanti is the Kevin Feige of the DC really Cinematic is. Universe. It's just their cinematic is TV.
And I'm perfectly fine with that.
You know, if they could pull off Teen Titans, I would suggest looking at least as part of the roots, seriously, to the Teen Titans cartoon of the early 2000s.
Teen Titans Go.
Because that is what most people know. That is to say, a much larger chunk of people watched that than read the comics or have read the comics in a while.
Yeah.
I think you could wed the two a little bit.
Well, they were going to do Titans. It was actually called Titans, and it was going to be the 20-somethings, like... They were going to be the older version.
Inevitably, these kids are going to age no matter what.
Yeah, see, I think that it sounded like they were doing sort of the CW version, which is why I was kind of interested to see, but I don't think they would have pulled it off.
Yeah.
Anyway, that does free up some development money, so now M. Night Shyamalan is going to do Tales from the Crypt for TNT.
I saw this mentioned, and the kind of gag was, well, it's the perfect project for him. My joke was that his 20 years of movies or whatever have been a long con, or an audition, rather, to get Tales from the Crypt.
Well, I have to ask, because I didn't read the article, but is he going to be directing these, or is he basically producing, running?
I believe it is the same deal as kind of what he did with... the show on Fox that we watched.
The Wayward Pines.
Yeah. I think he says he is rebooting. Short and long form content curated by.
So here's the thing. I think he's a good
curated by me.
I assume that means he's pulling out the stories and
he's gonna be like the Crypt Keeper.
I hope he plays the Crypt Keeper.
There's no Crypt Keeper.
What?
Yep.
That sort of makes sense. It's a bit of a tired device.
Yep. No Crypt Keeper.
But I will say, Shyamalan is a good storyteller. He's had more hits than misses for me, just personally.
It's gotten close.
He's had more misses than hits for me.
But I think
bad when he wrote misses.
Devil, I mean, his writing is not bad.
No, there's also always certain pitfalls.
Yeah.
Even the ones I like, sometimes it's with caveats.
Yeah.
But I will say he's got 4 to 5 movies I really quite like, and at least one or two of those I think are great. Like basically, like Unbreakable and Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
I think for and I did like Wayward Pines, of course.
But that wasn't him.
He directed the first episode.
He directed the first episode, and there was another showrunner who really was responsible for it.
It felt like he was appropriately producing it or whatever, yeah. just because it had some of those twists and turns.
And that's probably what we're going to get here. I don't know if we'll get like a hugely influenced. It's yeah. all going to be that sort of style yeah. that he. And I'm going to give it a shot.
Well, it's TNT and Tales of the Crypt. I mean, here's the thing: Tales from the Crypt originally was on HBO,
yes, it was.
Which meant they could do whatever lurid things they wanted. And I think you need that kind of luridness. And I have a feeling this is going to feel somewhat watered down.
Wasn't there a Tales from the Crypt movie involving Dennis Miller?
There were several Tales from the Crypt movies. One of them was Bordello of Blood starring Dennis Miller.
Okay.
Wasn't there also Tales from the Hood?
That was related. That was not actually Tales from the Crypt. Anyway, I'm neither here nor there on this. I suspect I will not watch it unless yeah. I hear, oh, it's great.
I give it a shot. I like horror anthology, so.
If they remix it up enough so that it kind of feels like its own new entity, I feel like Tales from the Crypt is, you know, as a 50s product originally, or, yeah, 50s from EC Comics,
yeah.
is something that this time may have passed. That said, short format horror stuff with some, you know, twisty endings at times is not a terrible idea. So I would, you know, drop the Crypt Keeper, open it, make it scary. They've definitely gotten better at horror with TV over
yeah,
the last
true.
5-10 years. So maybe, you know,
yeah.
I'm kind of with you.
By the way, if anyone's wondering why there's so much TV news, it's because the Television Critics Association is going on right now.
Uh-huh.
So everybody's showing off their reels and their promo stuff. So because the next bit of news also comes from the TCAs, and that is that HBO has greenlit a Deadwood movie.
Is this going to be sort of the finale
yeah.
that we never got?
Yes.
And they definitely have greenlit it.
They have definitely. The president of HBO's development basically said, you know, he made a deal with, who's the guy who runs it?
I forget his name. But
I'm blanking on his name and I feel terrible because I like that creator.
Are they going to get all the original cast members?
That's the trick, is getting all the cast back.
Because, I mean,
and the sets are all destroyed.
Yeah.
So, but they are moving forward. This looked like a dead project for a long time, but the HBO, clearly the guy who's like VP at HBO really wants it to happen. And he's talked to the guy whose name I'm blanking on.
Yeah.
And
if they
they're.
Can pull it off.
Yeah.
I haven't seen all of what there is of Deadwood. I need to because the cast is amazing.
It's a really good
show. I have, and it desperately needs an ending.
Yeah, it needs an ending. And that's part of the reason why I think my interest in it kind of floundered.
It did for me, too. I didn't watch the third season because everybody was kind of telling me it kind of ends on a weak note. And I was like, all right, I'll skip season 3.
Season 3 is still good. I've watched all of season 3.
No, I believe you. I just didn't kind of want to hit that, like, blah. Point.
I didn't want to hit the space where, I don't have an ending here.
David Milch, by the way, is the creator.
Okay.
But
that's
yeah,
a lot, that's
so,
a big cast to get back.
Yeah, the network's programming president, Michael Lombardo, said, quote, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Here's what I would, a secondary reason I'd like it to happen, other than what I watched of Deadpool was great.
Deadwood. Different.
Sound remixers, please take that and destroy your copies of it. Do whatever you do, don't repurpose it.
Oh, I'm totally going to use that snippet.
Deadpool is great. Deadpool. anyway, Deadwood was great, but we've seen series end before their times.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, somebody will pick them up as like they'll finish it up as a comic, or it might get a movie or something like that. But by and large, these have kind of been disappointing follow-throughs.
In general, that's true.
And I feel like with the talent and sort of money, honestly, that they have at HBO, that they could create a shining beacon example
yes.
if it comes off
yep.
Of how to do it right, how to wrap it well. Effectively what Serenity was to Firefly,
yep.
they could do to
you know,
Deadwood.
I can think of one sort of revamp that's been fairly successful.
Yeah.
A little thing called Star Wars.
Whoa. That's different. That's not TV.
It can be done.
Yeah, but that's not, that is different from TV.
Yeah, that's true. TV-wise, you got Arrested Development, 24, all that stuff that is very divisive amongst the fans whether or not they like it.
Right.
Yeah, 24 was the same.
It was, but a lot of people didn't like it. Anyway, moving on. Max Landis is apparently developing Dirk Gently, Holistic Detective, for BBC America.
But before we proceed, Nick is groaning.
Sorry.
Is that just a general Max Landis?
I'm with him on this.
I'm getting there.
I'm getting there, too. Well, what has Max Landis done that we like?
He wrote Chronicle.
Okay, Chronicle was pretty good.
And then he's done a bunch of douchey stuff since then, and we hate him.
Yeah, and I was never as big on it as y'all were. So anyway, though,
it sucks.
And then every time I see him on the internet, I want to punch him in the face.
Okay, he's executive producing, so alongside some of the IDW guys and Circle of Confusion, who are the guys who developed Walking Dead.
I mean, this is a series that was written by Douglas Adams.
Yeah, right?
Douglas
Adams. That was the question I was going to put out. Has anybody here read it?
Nope.
I have not.
I know people who like it.
People like it.
But I don't know a ton of people.
The comic's done well.
I was going to say the comic's done well. The trade actually hits this week.
Yep.
Yep.
And BBC America has a pretty good track record.
They do.
Yep.
But, so, yeah.
Whatever, maybe.
Hopefully Max Landis won't screw it up.
I hope he doesn't screw up this product I don't know.
Finally, Nick, you remember the Marvel's Most Wanted thing, the Mockingbird, Lance Hunter?
Yes.
Remember how they officially killed that?
They were like, yeah, we're not going to do anything.
They were lying.
Oh.
They were actually outright lying because they quietly greenlit it and developed the pilot.
You know, I'm kind of okay with that.
Me too. Because I will watch.
Unless they're taking away Mockingbird from the main show.
I'm fine with that. She needs to get away like a life raft leaving a sinking ship. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've talked about this on my TV podcast many times, and I know you and I differ on this.
Oh, I actually can't even say anything more. I haven't watched the last six episodes.
I'm caught up. Mm-hmm. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that show that I will keep watching because of my devotion to Marvel, but I know it's terrible, and I wish they would cancel it to put me out of my misery. I can't not watch it while it's on, because it's a S.H.I.E.L.D. show on TV.
But it has not tainted the character for you.
No, I love Mockingbird, and I love the actress who's playing her.
Yeah.
So if she can escape the S.H.I.E.L.D. orbit and make an interesting show about her and Lance Hunter, who's basically her ex-husband Hawkeye in this universe.
Can they take Fitz?
No, leave Fitz behind. No. I want everybody else on S.H.I.E.L.D. gone. I like them okay, but I want them to get their own, like, world-traveling, ass-kicking, alias-type show away from all the other S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff.
Now, is this going to be a miniseries?
There's a pilot. We'll see where it goes from there.
Right.
So if the pilot's good, maybe it'll get developed into an ongoing.
I've still never, seen this character on the show since I've only ever seen, like, I guess the first episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Don't really care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess in the superhero world, the DC TV controls my TV viewing.
But at any rate, what they're going to do is kind of what they do with Agent Carter.
Yeah.
When S.H.I.E.L.D.'s on a break, Agent Carter will come in, and then when S.H.I.E.L.D. takes its second break, Most Wanted will come in. So the idea is they'll always have a Marvel show running on ABC, which is a good idea. I would have gone a little further afield than another S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Don't they have a couple more like Marvel projects in production?
I don't know.
I know that. They have touted that they still have the Damage Control in production.
Right.
And then there's another comedy that they did announce.
That's DC's comedy you're thinking of.
No, it's Marvel.
Really?
They did another one. So we'll see. I don't know.
All right.
Damage Control seems like it seems to me like a somewhat weirdly comedic idea to introduce into the mostly pretty serious Marvel movieverse.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem silly
to have incidental comedy, but they don't have.
It doesn't seem silly to introduce that into the Marvel television universe.
Yeah, and also the. You remember the one-shots they were doing for a while there? That Item 47 was very notably the kind of tone you'd want for Damage Control.
Yeah.
So I think it could work. All right. Leaving TV and over to movies, we have a director for Black Panther again.
Right? Who is the dude?
Ryan Coogler, the 29-year-old director of Creed. He was on Daily Show the other
day. That's 29?
He was on the Daily Show the other day, and this dude seems to really have his head on screwed straight, but also just... Really interesting to be 29 years old and be at this level of his game already.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. Some kind of prodigy.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see Creed, but I wanted to.
Me too, and I heard it's great. Creed.
Let's all go see Creed this weekend.
All right, let's stop the podcast and go see Creed. All right, we're back. And we haven't seen Creed yet. We saw Star Wars for a fourth time instead.
That's true.
No, I want to see Creed, but I also haven't watched all the Rockies, and I hear you should watch all the Rockies first.
Oh, which ones have you not seen?
All of them except for 3 and 4.
Okay, that was the only one I haven't seen. That was the one that was, like, I guess, focused on
his son. I haven't
seen,
like, the last, like, 2. Or maybe 3.
Rocky Balboa was the last one. Did you not see that?
I did not see that one.
It was good.
Yeah.
I would say it was quite good.
Yeah. I want to see them. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah.
I don't know when I will.
Yeah.
And then finally, two less sad bits of news.
Yeah.
2016 has been kind of a kick in the balls so far.
Yeah. In the world of celebrities, we didn't talk about this, but a few weeks ago, Lemmy,
yeah,
that was a big thing. Randy, neither you nor I have, like, the metalhead blood in us, but obviously his loss has been very keenly felt in,
also,
that community.
Lemmy wasn't a super surprise. Lemmy was a hard-drinking, drug-using, right. You know, it's kind of surprising Lemmy got as far as he did.
Nick, he was, what, Motorhead, right?
Yeah, Motorhead.
Nick, what's your placement on the world of metal? You're more than Randy and I.
More than you guys, but I did not listen to a ton of Motorhead.
Yeah. So. More Metallica.
I felt bad on Facebook because all my friends were posting about him, and I was like, I can't, I'd just be a total poser to be like, why'd you leave us, Lemmy?
Yep, I don't know who Lemmy is.
Now, that said, I think everybody knew and loved David Bowie.
Yes. David Bowie. Now, before David Bowie died, the day before David Bowie died, we lost Angus Scrimm,
a cult film actor, but one that I certainly
He was the tall man from Phantasm. Yep. He was also an Alias as their torturer, basically their interrogator. Yep. He was, by all accounts, a great guy, a really nice guy. He was 89; like he had a good run.
Yep. And I've met Angus Scrimm, Matt and I, years ago. That's Matt, my brother. Both of us are fans of the cult horror series Phantasm, especially the first two. Those are the two I recommend people watch. They were doing a showing of actually, I believe, all four Phantasm movies, latter two, which you don't necessarily need to see, over, I think, two nights. And we went the first night to see the best ones. And because the cast was there and the director. And so we met him, and he was he's a great guy. He's a... he's a gentlemanly old fellow.
I can see that.
Who can, like, really seem to enjoy his role. I think he liked being the guy who scared the
kids. He would like to sign things, boy, and say that, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
what was it I saw? Some video that made the rounds that was him on... Gosh, I can't remember. Like, some... it was an anecdote about him from somebody else. Maybe we can find it and post it in the with the show notes for this one, Randy. It was a great anecdote about his entry in the British like Book of Horror and Fantasy, and a letter he sent to them related to it. He was surprisingly sly and witty for a fellow of his advanced years.
Yeah, and also this, of course, is a show that J.J. Abrams has a particular fondness for.
Oh, right.
Because they're doing a new 4K conversion of Phantasm 2 for Blu-ray.
Right, which I will be happy to see.
And Captain Phasma and her chrome armor is influenced by the chrome deadly balls.
The spheres. The trademark deadly weapon of the tall man's crew. Yeah. And of course, just to show our devotion to the tall man, Randy, you and I have both played in a homebrew role-playing game set in the Phantasm horrorverse.
Yep, two games, actually.
Yeah. Or actually, maybe a little bit more than that?
It might have been three.
Yeah,
there's been at least one sequel. we have a love for it, and I kind of feel like the really sad part about Angus Scrimm dying now is that I feel like he probably would have gotten a cameo in one of the Star Wars movies.
Oh yeah,
I'm surprised he didn't.
Such an amazing Sith.
I'm surprised he wasn't in Episode 7.
I wonder if he was ailing or anything.
I don't know. Maybe so.
I just have to say as an aside, his own real name, Angus Scrimm, is like the best horror actor name of all time.
It sounds
like a scary tall man guy.
It does. Yep. And then the day after that, David Bowie died, age 69, of cancer that he's been fighting for 18 months that he knew about but he was keeping secret.
Yeah.
Which is a way to go, I guess.
It's crazy. It does sort of – it feels right for him.
Yeah.
It felt like – it seems like the kind of thing that David Bowie would do.
Well, he put out an album. He recorded the album in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was like his goodbye to everybody. And we didn't know that at the time, but now we know – and that's kind of an amazing thing to do.
It is. Did you see the photos going around that were taken, I believe, on his birthday, which was just a few days before his passing?
Yeah, a couple days ago.
And it's these great photos where he's looking as like young and stylish as ever.
Yep.
I mean, dude looked amazing at 69.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looked like he was like 40.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a good run. He had a good life. He got a lot done, and he was a good guy. I mean, there's all the stories around how he got on MTV for not playing enough black
videos from black creators. Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched that video, and he really kind of held the I guess it was the MTV's like program director or something. He held his feet to the fire on it.
That's good.
But he did it in this very kind of
charming
British way
that
was very cool to see. And at the end of it, the guy defends himself as best he can. And he basically says, middle America's just not ready for it. We'd scare them too much.
Yeah.
Bowie's kind of making these broad points about his like, you know, it's rock and roll, right? This is kind of rock, that's what rock does.
Yeah.
So it's like, aren't they scared of me?
You're positioning yourselves as like this rebellious channel, and yet you're afraid to play, you know, this music. And at the end, the guy like kind of makes his point, and David Bowie's like, "I see, okay." And he's like, the guy's like, "So you understand where we're coming from?" And he's like, "Well, I wouldn't say I understand it, but I see where you're coming from." I was like, "I've never heard such a sort of low key just evisceration."
Yeah, it's nice.
He's like, he was like, "I see, so you're scared."
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and then there's also some great stuff. You know, his Christmas song with Bing Crosby.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Mick Jagger doing Dancing in the Streets.
Lots of crossover pop culture stuff. There's a clip going around from Extras.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yeah.
Where he eviscerates Ricky Gervais, like, coming up with an impromptu song about him. Which, by the way, the crazy thing is, it's kind of like all of David Bowie's stuff, it's kind of catchy.
Yeah.
Like, the lyrics are just cruel. Just
well, and also, cruel, he played Tesla very memorably in The Prestige.
Yep.
And, of course, the Goblin King.
Goblin King, and I like to call out his small but notable, very underplayed role in Last Temptation of Christ. He played, not Judas, but the Roman Pontius Pilate. Oh.
Yeah,
in a really kind of quietly subtle way. I had randomly looked it up just to rewatch it on YouTube, and the guy had some acting chops.
Yeah, Bowie was, and it's funny because this music, I came in on Let's Dance and some of his '80s stuff.
He was kind of in a more pop mode there.
It was not his strongest stuff, and I wasn't a huge Bowie fan then. But then my cousins played me Suffragette City, and I realized, oh, this guy's great.
Yep.
And then he's turned up everywhere since then. He's in Moulin Rouge, we talked about earlier.
I haven't seen that in ages.
He has a song in Moulin Rouge. He sings one of the songs.
He's also, of course, reinvented himself in the 90s with a Trent Reznor-produced album that kind of like veered towards the darker industrial stuff that was going on then. I was thinking that he had to have been sort of the model that like Madonna like looked to. And I know she didn't actually like write a tribute to him, of course, but... That method of sort of reinvention that that's you know Lady Gaga and other sort of some people who are also very visual rockers have done I feel like he had to have been one of the first great ones of our era.
I agree. And it was a shock because he's like I say he's only 69.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of people who I'd rather had been taken instead of Bowie.
He's also I can't imagine really a more iconic figure.
Yeah,
I did not appreciate at the time when Freddie Mercury died.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I was aware of him, but like I kind of like, and I should have been because he was my era. Like it was only sort of after his death that I was like, oh man, we lost a rock god.
Yeah.
But like I think because of David Bowie's specific like his flamboyant looks and his kind of. Lyrics that were maybe a little bit more leaned a little bit more towards a poetic than say than Freddie Mercury's.
Yeah,
he had that feeling of like this immortal rock god.
Yeah.
He is as definitive a rock god as you can get.
I will say probably not a good time right now to re-listen to Space Oddity or Under Pressure. Both of those might have an emotional effect you're not prepared for.
Well, you know, everybody, all my friends on Facebook were posting these various tributes and stuff to his favorite songs.
Yeah.
And it's when you have a career as long as his, one of the shocking things that you have all these endless songs about death and loss. And I posted the song Sorrow, which is not specifically about, like, that kind of loss. But, you know, his voice is, like, is filled with this longing in it and this pain. And, you know, he had one of the great voices of all time. There's the crazy one, the one that I had not heard was his cover of I think somebody else's song called "My Death."
Oh wow!
Did you get a chance to listen to it? It's an amazing performance. I think it's actually a famous performance. Again, I wish I was more musically plugged in.
Yeah, me too. I don't know this stuff as well. Yeah,
but he did a bad song. That's the problem.
No, China Girls is close as we're going to get.
Yep. catchy.
And that's catchy as hell.
I also like that he's kind of opened up to new or younger audiences. I mean. His song was prominently featured in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right, Moon Age Daydream.
And I think kind of caught younger generation sort of caught on to that because of it was on the mixtape.
It's crazy, and probably through stuff like Rock Band over the years. I think, and again, his reinventions in the '90s.
Yeah,
I
mean, so his legacy will live on. Sort of through generations.
Right, he was already like I knew him primarily as a person who kind of populated classic rock stations growing up.
Yeah.
And you know, like it's one of those ones where at some point I had that sort of epiphany where I'm like, oh wow, he's really got a lot of good songs.
Yeah.
You know, you look at his, like, best stuff, and you're like, I know every single one of these.
Yeah.
That is not easy to pull off.
Nope. Nope. Anyway.
A keenly felt loss.
Yes. Rest in peace, David Bowie. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for this week. We are talking comics for Wednesday, January 13th. And this is not the first week of January, but as Nick and I were noting, this is basically like first week of comics because it's like a huge – you had 25 comics to read. I had 20.
It's a behemoth.
I didn't count mine. The size doesn't count.
Dave read like 10, which for Dave is like 25.
No, I think Dave's right. Size doesn't count, but quality counts.
Quality-wise, and this is a pretty good week.
This is a really good week.
It's a pretty good week. So I'm going to start off because I have the non-Marvel of all of us as my pick.
Gee, Mr. Fancy.
And what I've got is a smaller book.
My cheater pick is not Marvel, okay?
Your cheater pick isn't, but your main pick is.
You go to hell.
Marvel whore. this book was sent to me, the creator sent me a PDF. I can't remember if it was the writer or the artist, but a little while back, and it's called Gutter Magic. It's a little four-issue miniseries from IDW, and we're always talking about how steampunk seems to be a very popular genre, but it's not as prominent in comics.
Right.
It's getting more prominent. There's everything from Lady Mechanica to Antarctic Press's little comics
to Lantern City.
Yeah, and then we're seeing a little bit more of it, but there hasn't been like a really just like a great steampunk comic, I don't think. This one's pretty good. It's a it starts off with a sort of a guy and his goblin pal trying to rob a mage of his stuff. It's got a little bit of that Dresden Files vibe because there's guns that have enchantments on it. It's
I saw from the premise, Randy, that it's sort of an alternate history where like magic rose up out of World War II or like...
So nearly a century ago, World War II spiraled out of control when wizards on both sides entered the conflict. Together they sparked a magical arms race that brought the world to the brink of Armageddon. In the aftermath, a strange mix of sorcerers, fantastic creatures, and ordinary people band together, founding a new civilization upon the ruins of the old world. Which sounds post-apocalyptic, and it does have, like, the Empire State Building has a big chunk taken out of it because some of it's levitating. But
you know what, that also reminds me a little bit of the premise in the RPG Shadowrun, tabletop RPG Shadowrun.
But this
where
is not
magic kind of returns to the world and reshapes it.
But Shadowrun is very much cyberpunk. This is very much steampunk Victorian kind of era.
But like you mentioned, a goblin in there.
There's a goblin.
Yep. A little bit.
But they definitely have the street gangs of gangs in New York here. It's very much New York based.
Yep.
But it's in the sort of mystical New York. And like I say, it gives a Dresden Files vibe a little bit
is
too.
Is that character in the beginning? Is that the lead, Randy?
Yes. He seems to be sort of a gunslinger rogue type.
Yep.
And he's got a goblin buddy who's his sidekick. It's really good. It also reminds me of what I like about the D&D comics, like with the Forgotten Realms comic we liked.
Yeah.
It's got that adventure sense of humor, you know, great action. The artist is a guy I don't know, Brett Barkley, but it's pretty solid looking.
I was flipping through it and digging it.
Yeah, I really like this book, and I'm looking forward to seeing this is from Comics Experience, which is a new publisher that's publishing through IDW. And they have a few other books coming out, but this was really interesting and really strong. And we only have a couple of on the shelf. With any luck, we'll be able to reorder it if it sells out. But give it a look if you're looking for something steampunk and fun and different. Nick, what do you got?
Well, I think we've with Marvel Pick, of course. We've picked this book, I think, every issue.
Yep.
Because
I think you've picked this book every.
No.
I picked one of them.
You picked one of them. I've picked the other three.
Yes.
Because it's that awesome. I'm talking about All New Wolverine. The fourth issue hits this week. And this sees X-23, or the new Wolverine, team up with Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Quick trivia question. Does X-23, is her name Laura?
Laura.
Does she have a last name?
I don't think she does.
Like,
does she?
More like Logan.
Yeah, kind of it's more like that just type
Logan.
Of thing.
Well, it makes sense if she's the female Logan that she'd have a female Laura, one name.
Yeah.
I feel like she does have a last name and I can't remember
I
it, but, you know. Laura Kinney, it actually says here, right under
there you go.
I think Kinney was her sort of mother and did keep that. But it's kind of interesting. They do refer to Logan as her father in this, which I thought was kind of cool.
Well, yeah, spiritually.
Spiritually. Yeah, genetically, spiritually, you know, whatever. But this actually sees Wolverine take her trio of people that
clones.
She's... Clones. You know, clones that she's trying to keep safe and goes see Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange's place is not the, you know... most calm place to go.
They're definitely going to cue from Jason Aaron's run, where it's a where it's got all kinds of dangers and weirdness laying around.
Is not a, as you know benign as you'd like to think it is. And things.
Why are they visiting him?
Because the clones are deteriorating and they're looking for a magician and a doctor who can help them.
Basically,
heal.
Laura thinks that Doctor Strange could help save them.
That's actually the central quest of the book, as it turns out, is to try and keep her to keep her sisters from dying of this thing, which is not unlike what's going on in Orphan Black, actually.
Right.
I think that's definitely in the DNA of this comic.
Yeah, a little bit. And Tom Taylor utilizes the Marvel Universe in such a fun way. And of course, David Lopez's artwork is gorgeous.
He's got a co-artist on this one.
David
Nataro?
Yeah, David Navarot. Again, fantastic artist. Very much in sort of the same vein of him, I think.
Yeah, this actually had a little bit more of like that Chris Samnee vibe in a little bit. There's some great art. It's beautiful.
But there's fighting of monsters.
Yep.
We get a good glimpse of what makes X-23 who she is. Doctor Strange gets a glimpse into her soul, essentially.
The other thing is, this book is getting better with every issue. Like, every issue I like better than the last, and I've liked it quite a bit of going on. It's also got that great action scene, all of it. But the thing I'm liking that I realize is they're developing her sisters into their own characters. Like, Gabby is very much is what, like, Molly from Runaways would be if she was a Wolverine clone.
Yes.
And they're doing some of the same fun stuff they did with Molly. And then they've got the sort of more gruff one. And then they've got the one who's sort of the sacrificing leader type. They all have different personalities despite all having the same genetic base.
These were clones made probably to be used for military purposes
Built by Alchemax.
But to do nefarious stuff.
Yeah, to be special operatives.
But something about the program went bad, and Alchemax decided to scrub the entire...
Right, so they would have just been executed or something.
And they escaped. They lost several more of their sisters on their way out, but these are the three that sort of survived.
Yeah.
X-23 has a pretty tragic backstory as a weapon in development.
Same sort of sense.
So I presume trying to sort of save them is a weird way of trying to save herself.
Yeah,
or
definitely.
Give somebody the protection she couldn't get.
Also, interacting with Doctor Strange is a lot of him sort of acknowledging that, you know, her role as the new Wolverine and the legacy she's carrying, which we haven't seen as much, which is kind of neat.
It is.
There's also a great meta reference where Doctor Strange says, you are Wolverine, worthy of being the new Wolverine. And she's like, well... Some people will disagree with you, mostly guys on the internet. And I was like, wow, that is on the nose and pretty harsh.
It was funny.
And there's a great stinger that sees where Laura is going next in the Marvel Universe to save her sisters.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so much fun. It really, really is. It's one of those books that I can't wait to read the next issue.
I had high hopes for this book, but it's outlived. It's outlived all my expectations. I'm really enjoying it. Dave, your pick?
I have a Marvel book, too. It's the second issue of Scarlet Witch. Continues, I would say, a James Robinson's comeback.
Yep.
Y'all, I think, are particularly enjoying his Squadron Supreme run.
Yep. Much so.
And we enjoyed his, Secret Wars miniseries. What did he do? The Ultron, Age of Ultron.
Versus Marvel Zombies.
Marvel Zombies, yeah.
And, of course, Airboy.
And Airboy, the schlong-havenous book of them
filthy,
all.
Filthy comic.
Yes. Anyway, in the second issue of Scarlet Witch, she travels to Greece, where the whole deal is she's kind of trying to somewhat redeem herself from her past sins she's like a consulting magician on magic-related crimes. And in particular, there are violent crimes going on in Greece that have, affected both the army and there's a local Greek superhero. They refer to him as the Greek Captain America.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a cool idea, even if he is dead by the time we find out about it.
Yeah, he's in one panel.
But Robinson drops bits and pieces like that, and it has some of the... There's so many neat ideas in here, it's reminding me a bit of Starman in a good way.
Yeah, I can see that.
I like that they even dropped the Hercules reference.
Yeah, they acknowledge Hercules and Ares and the kind of the Greek gods. And the fact that sometimes they're more active as heroes, sometimes they can become villains.
Yeah.
It's sort of in a weird way, when he writes about it, it fits that mercurial nature of the actual myths, you know, where the gods are very capricious.
Yeah.
But the essential antagonist of this one, it seems to be a reborn Minotaur.
Yeah.
The labyrinth creature. And there's reveals to be had in that, but it is a scary, dark monster. But what's really interesting in this is the sort of conversations as she's investigating it. Specifically, she visits the witch Hecate, That's, you know, famously like sort of the mother of witches. And
prominently in Buffy.
Was she?
Was she?
Wasn't she the one that Willow?
I don't remember.
It does sound like, I mean, that's a very common thing, I think, in Wiccan magic, yeah. But that shows...
I don't remember.
That okay. show's version of Wiccan was, of course, its own stylized
thing. I'm pretty
sure it
was, but...
It could be. That makes sense. But she is an interesting... I don't want to say too much about the character, other than that a character that probably has been... they mentioned has even been a villain a few times in Marvel Universe, isn't right now. She's kind of doing a... It's almost like a goddess in retirement.
Yeah.
And their conversation is just really interesting. Yeah. She doesn't seem to... It's not the... He's not following any of the obvious beats.
Right.
She's not nefarious, but she does have a certain edge to her.
Well, I have to say, one of my worries about issue one of this was I didn't want Wanda to be dragged down to sort of a street level kind of thing where she was always going to be the consulting detective in New York.
Right.
So seeing her go out to Greece and problem solve out there, I like her as like a freelance magic investigator of the world.
I agree. I feel like she has a power level and an Avengers Association that somewhat demands bigger things.
And I liked seeing its scope expand a little bit.
I agree completely. Now, I did like that first issue.
Sure, me too.
But it did feel a little small for her.
This is bigger.
This is bigger.
But still of a piece with what they did in the first issue.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And it has that art.
The art is amazing. It does seem like they're, because I know he's at least beginning this series with stories that stand alone. You know, it's the tradition of, yes, they build on each other a bit, but by and large, any given issue could be read on its own. That you could easily, this could be your first issue.
Yeah.
And each issue, though, is going to have a different artist on it. This one is an artist named Marco Rudy. I do not know this artist.
He is
but...
the artist behind Bucky Barnes.
Okay. This is a much more approachable, because that was like this kind of weird high-concept sci-fi stuff.
And there's still some layouts that are very reminiscent of what he was
but
doing.
It's painted-looking.
It's a tamer version of it. It was painted.
Yeah, this is gorgeous art.
It was painted versions of cosmic events. It looked like the ending of 2001.
This is definitely more grounded.
Beautiful paintings of actual Greece and, you know, the countryside, the cityscapes. I really loved it. He does sort of do the experimental layout that reminds me of who's the guy? Is it Gene Hall?
Yeah,
that I'm thinking of who did Batwoman.
J.H. Williams.
J.H. Williams. It reminds me of J.H. Williams more than a little bit. It was very realistic, but with also a degree of stylization in there, especially as far as color use goes and panel layout. Super enjoyed the issue, which also has a few callbacks to a few obscure Marvel characters, and at least one character who I'm like, I don't know who that is, but I'm interested to know who they are. But I was surprised at how much I liked this issue, so I hope people will give this series a try. I think it really deserves a look.
It was a really good second issue. Dave, what was your cheater pick this week?
My cheater pick, which I probably won't go into too much detail on because we've talked about the book so very much, is Descender. This is issue number 9 of Descender. This is, you know, essentially, you know, there's the story is occurring on multiple fronts now. You have in the sci-fi series, you have the robot Tim 21 on the run and with his caretakers, and there's infighting among them. They are dealing with a sort of a robot resistance that has been revealed in there. There's some, I was happy to revisit Driller.
Driller's back.
My favorite ass-kicking robot. essentially a lot of the characters that we've seen in sort of off on their own, like Tim's former sort of owner, I guess, who's grown up to be a bounty hunter.
It was his former friend when he was a kid.
That's right. It was his companion. I say owner, you know, in the robot vernacular. I don't remember what they use in this.
Yeah, but he's Andy. He's a robot bounty hunter now.
Yeah.
And his partner's great. His partner is almost like Driller for me. I love that character.
I love his partner. And he's meeting Driller and some other people who got left behind in the previous issue.
Yep.
So essentially... various characters are sort of starting to get to know each other. The different worlds are connecting.
Yeah.
And yet there are still some big mysteries and some neat new places to go. I don't know. Every issue I read is always very fulfilling as a single issue. Every once in a while I'll forget a little bit of like what's going on with sort of larger plot threads. But, you know, I'll be getting the trade paperbacks and reading those.
Yeah.
And I do, I feel I should, I'm going to lobby here to make this one of our reading with Rogues books sometime soon.
No.
We talked about it a little bit. I'm just going to talk over you. I don't care. We felt like right on the heels of Star Wars, we didn't want to jump right into another space opera type book. Yeah. And this is sort of a space opera book.
That's actually the only reason I didn't want to do it, because I do want to do Descender as a book club slash.
But yeah, sometime soon I'd love to talk about this with the group, and it would give me an excuse to reread the graphic novel. So, Nick, what you got for your backup pick?
My backup pick is Mighty Thor number 3.
Yep.
Which... sort of sees the
what's so good about it
War of Realms continue on, but
what is the War of Realms?
Basically, Malekith is taking over each of the 9 realms.
Okay, 9 worlds of Asgard.
So it's like all of craziness. Them.
Yeah. And they're on Alfheim, which is the home to the Light Elves.
Yep.
And basically, as Malekith and what is Loki's Laufey?
Yeah.
Secret weapon is to stop Thor is Loki. Mm-hmm. And this is entire issue is basically Loki and Jane Foster kind of dueling it out, both with words and in Jane Foster's way with Mjolnir, because she doesn't want to talk. But Loki is sort of interestingly trying to say that he's different, he's not the same person, but there's multiple incarnations of himself that sort of manifest. So
yeah, I actually don't know what the current Loki is in the Marvel Universe.
He's tried to change himself, but he's sort of got his past lives living in his brain.
Okay.
He's not the hero that he was as like an agent for his mother, but he doesn't sort of want to not be that person. He doesn't want to be a bad guy at this point, but sometimes he can't help it. So it's very much sort of the Tom Hiddleston version.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, that sort of thing, the guy who's right on the cusp of doing good, but you kind of want him to be bad because he's at his most fun.
It's sort of, it's Jason Aaron doing a lot of wordplay, and using Loki in that way is such a cool thing. And also we get to see the sort of JMS version, the female Loki, that was actually utilizing Jane Foster's body, fight Jane Foster.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was Jane Foster's
utilizing
body.
Jane Foster's... I'm confused.
Loki's soul was in Jane Foster's body.
That's
Jane
why.
Foster's body who's dying of cancer?
No, previous. During JMS as well.
Oh, way back when, like, you know, 10 years ago or 8 years ago.
I didn't
ago.
Know that was Jane Foster.
Yes, okay. It was. And it's her that version of Loki fighting Jane Foster for. And it's just fun. And it's really just entertaining. Made me chuckle quite a few times. And the arc by Russell Dowderman is amazing, as always.
Nice.
All right, my pick, and I may have picked every issue of this book. I'm not sure.
You have.
Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 5. I liked it. This is another one of these Marvel. All these Marvel books are sneaking up on me. Like, I like them, and then I like them more, and then I'm completely in love with them by, like, 3 or 4 issues in. So this issue introduces the new Falcon, who we've seen previously, who's a kid who was experimented upon by Carl Malus. As 80s a Mark Gruenwald villain, as you will find.
Yep.
I was happy to see him back.
He's kind of, he's a bit of a Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, yeah. And this Falcon is he's a teenager who was he used to help, they get a little backstory here where he's very much of a piece of Sam Wilson. He was a guy who used to help people coming over the border because he himself had come over the border when he was 6 with his mom.
Yep.
You know, and then he got captured and transformed, much like Sam Wilson was captured and transformed by Red Skull.
Yep.
It's a very parallel kind of origin.
Yep.
And that's all interesting. And
the
story,
by the way, his a backstory as somebody who came across the border illegally.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Is of course cements the book's politicalness.
Yes. This book is overtly political.
Yeah.
And that goes through into the main story, which is about sort of how Diamondback was recruited back into the Serpent, not Society, Serpent Syndicate now, or whatever they're called.
They
Serpent Solutions.
They themselves in a very corporate way, although they were always kind of corporate.
I can't remember if they're Serpent Solutions or whatever they're called, but it's a great rebranding of the Serpent Society as a as basically corporate bad guys. Basically there's a bit as to why she fell in with them, which very much has that 1%, you know, kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Their bad guy is a corporate raider, basically doing the Martin Shkreli as bad guy, essentially. Yeah.
His speech, his justification speech, was a lot of fun.
And it's funny, his pitch could easily have come out of an 80s corporate villain. It's so cyclical, but that's really great, and I like what they're doing. He's a likable, slimy bad guy. And then, of course, there's the Misty Knight when she shows up and signs into the desk to fight her way up to him, which I thought was just a great little touch. It's got really nice art by Daniel Acuna, although this issue is actually by Paul Renaud, doing a sort of a more Acuna-looking version of it.
Yeah. It's been visually strong throughout, though.
And
it's got D-Man.
It's fun, it's light, it's got a lot of, it's got some cool action, it's got, like I say, overtly political, which I feel like Captain America should be an overtly political book. And it's very contrasting sort of how Sam Wilson is Cap and how he's different from what Steve Rogers was. I am a diehard Steve Rogers Captain America fan. I don't like that he's an old guy. I want him as Cap. But if this is what they're going to do with Sam Wilson as Cap, I'm on board. This is one of my favorite books.
That sort of generally defines Marvel's fairly successful reinvention of some of their characters lately, whether it's Thor that Nick was just enjoying, or Superior Spider-Man two years ago, where we were all like, I don't know if this is a good idea. Oh, there's a good story going on here. All right, let's do it.
You know what this reminds me of more than anything? Is DC in the 90s when they were bringing in Connor Hawke and Kyle Rayner and Wally West and sort of all that stuff and making it all work?
You know what's funny? At the time...
You mean legacy heroes are working in the Marvel Universe?
Not just legacy, but also reinventing heroes. Like, Peter Parker is still Peter Parker, but it's a different version.
Yeah. Right. I was very much against those legacy heroes in the 90s on a just sort of conceptual basis.
Yeah.
I was just kind of digging in my heels. I'm like, Hal Jordan is the one
Green Lantern,
really
yep.
Green Lantern. Yep. Only to find that character, you know, that, like, in the actual stories, I just found him a little bit too dry and boring. Honestly, a character who was... very much of a piece with the 50s.
Yeah.
And was great for those kinds of stories. When Darwin Cook would get a hold of him and actually portray him in that story, I loved it.
Yeah.
But I was not feeling it in the other ones, and I was like, oh, I wish I had been sort of more open in the 90s because I missed out on good stories with Connor Hawke and Kyle Rayner and these other guys. And, of course, I did love Wally West. That was my flash kind of when I came in over DC. But I do think, you know, there's definitely a certain amount of resistance to some of the changes Marvel's done.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can feel like, you know, it can look a little pandering or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, I have no doubt that sometimes they're like, there's a corporate, interest in like, well, in diversity.
Yeah.
But the honest truth is that the stories are what are paying off.
Yeah, they really are.
And I feel like deserve a look just for good stories.
Agreed. All right, on my otherwise giant stack of stuff to read this week, Darth Vader, Vader Down concludes in Darth Vader number 15. It's a great conclusion. There's a little bit of a status quo change for both Darth Vader and Star Wars as a result, which I liked.
Yep.
Web Warriors number 3, which continues the multiversal Spider-Mans versus the multiversal Electros and does some really cool stuff with it and also reintroduces a Spider-Verse hero that I was glad to see back. All New All Different Avengers number 3 wraps a very quick first arc, which I always appreciate, and basically puts the Avengers together. I love what Wade is doing with the Avengers. His action work is not always the strongest sometimes, but his character stuff is fantastic.
You know what's funny is Wade used to be, I think, pretty strong at action, or at least I've seen him do pretty strong action. Maybe he's just a little off his game lately.
Maybe so. Shield number 1 starts, which I thought was... I love Mark Wade's Shield. This one is much more directly based on the TV show. It's the entire cast of the show with Tony Stark guest starring in. But there's some fun stuff in here, and I quite liked what they did with Phil and an old girlfriend. And, of course, any book that has Mockingbird in it is going to win me over a little bit. So I liked it. I thought it was a good first issue. The latest issue of Birthright, which continues to be great and is really like a – it reminds me of what I love about Saga. It's not quite as dirty. But it's got that sort of sweeping feel to it. Second issue of Ed Brisson and Adam Gorham's Violent, or The Violent, which is a crime drama, which I'm kind of enjoying so far. And then some books I haven't read from Marvel. I just didn't get time yet. All New Hawkeye number 3, Silk number 3, and Red Wolf number 2. And then in terms of graphic novel stuff, there is a little golden book, the DC Super Friends Super Pets.
We've championed the Super Pets before,
yep.
Which has has already had fun books and an amazing Super Pet encyclopedia.
Yep.
And this, here they adapt it to.
Yeah, this was like a ton of fun. It's a little golden book format. It's just a little story. If you've got a little kid who you read to at night, this is a good story that's got great artwork and it's quick, so you won't be spending like 30 minutes reading to them. I speak to you parent to parent. There's a collection of Daredevil, the Epic Collections, which we've talked about many times before. This one's called A Touch of Typhoid. And it is Innocenti's run with John Romita Jr. on art. And this has some crazy stuff like Devil, like Daredevil versus Mephisto, along with the Punisher and Typhoid Mary and some of his more street level bad guys.
Like he was fighting the Blob in there.
The Blob is in here.
Whenever Innocenti wrote something, though, I will say this: she always approached it sort of from an unexpected vantage point.
Yeah.
So Daredevil versus Mephisto is, you know, focuses on, I think, Matt's Catholicism.
Yeah, it's a perfect fit.
It is not like I have to go into hell and literally fight it out with Mephisto. It's a sort of more thoughtful and sort of more introspective spin on it.
Yeah. Like, and it's got beautiful artwork.
Man, I was flipping through it, and I have some of those odds and ends issues, and I was wanting to get the whole collection because the art looks so good.
Also, finally in, after the hardcover has been out for a while, the Death of Wolverine trade finally hits this week. This story has been sort of snowed under after Secret Wars and everything else. It sort of got forgotten, but it's a really good story.
Yeah, I know that we talked, Nick and you and I in particular, I think, talked about it a lot as it was coming out.
It's quite good.
Finally, just in time for Star Wars Volume 1 to be our book club selection, Star Wars Volume 2 and Darth Vader Volume 2 both hit this week, and they're both great.
So if there's any sort of interest in Star Wars, which may or may not be occurring for
there
people,
might be some people interested in Star Wars.
This would be
I don't know why.
Nick, what else is on your stack?
The fifth issue to Extraordinary X-Men, which sees them wrap up the first story arc.
Yep.
And leaves it in a new status quo that I quite liked. Did you cover Huck?
I didn't talk about Huck.
Okay, the third issue of Huck, Mark Miller and Raphael Albuquerque's sort of tribute to Superman.
I'm loving this book.
This is a very fun book. It's going in directions that I'm glad it's going in.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like typical Miller.
Yeah.
And Albuquerque's artwork is just dropped it gorgeous.
Yeah.
Third issue of James Robinson's Squadron Supreme.
Again, improving every issue.
Yeah, I'm invested in these characters. This sees them going up against the Uncanny Avengers. So,
And I don't like the Uncanny Avengers, but I liked this issue. It was a good. You know, you get those good super team fights.
Yeah,
this was one of those. Like
seeing Quicksilver going up against
Blur.
Blur was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
As a quick ask, I don't think it's the death that occurred in the first issue is probably
still on.
Are we trying to keep it secret?
No.
Oh, but yes, they killed Submariner.
Yeah.
Do you think it's definitely going
to... I think he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
I'm surprised that hasn't just been more sort of ripples, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely sort of...
He's got a sort of, for sure, cult fandom.
It's rippling in Squadron Supreme, but I don't know if anybody's reading the book.
That's the weird thing.
Yeah, it's definitely rippled there, but... and I'm sure we'll see mention of it elsewhere now, but... fourth issue of Uncanny Avengers, which also sees this is sort of the finale to the first arc. Very cool... Fun issue sort of sees Inhuman going up against an Inhuman, sort of their new Inhuman villain. And there's some cool stuff. There's a finale to it that I will say, if you read the standalone graphic novel by Rick Remender from a little while ago, Rage of Ultron, it feeds into that.
Okay.
New Green Lantern Corps by Tom Taylor and Ethan Van Shiver starts up.
Yep. This is a miniseries
called Edge of Oblivion.
Yep, this sort of picks up from Lost Army.
Yeah, basically sees the Green Lantern Corps sort of cordoned off in a uncharted sort of galaxy.
Not just a galaxy, I believe it's a universe.
Dying universe.
Yes. And sort of trying to see them find each other, try to get out of it, but then they run across another sort of civilization.
Yep.
And they're
flying around on Mogo, so that's kind of cool.
And they're flying around on Mogo, which is always cool.
I'm going to have to look in on this because, of course, Tom Taylor always catches our attention.
And I will say Ethan Van Shiver's artwork is pretty good in here.
Yep, people may remember him from essentially relaunching all of the Green Lanterns and Rebirth. Green Lantern Corps about 10 years
and
ago.
And also Flash Rebirth.
Yes.
It's true. The first issue of the new Wonder Woman book, Legend of Wonder Woman.
Basically, Wonder Woman Year 1, or Year 0, or Year
it's
1 through
of,
10.
There is a young child living on Themyscira, kind of under her mother's thumb a little bit, but also sort of wanting to be the sort of powerful, wanting to learn sort of how to protect her sisters, things like that. The art in here is gorgeous.
What was the book that came out a few years ago? Was it called Thor, Son of Asgard?
Yeah.
It had essentially like the teenage adventures of Thor and the Warriors 3 and Sif and Loki and all that. And I think this is kind of like that because it's all of them before they were legends. Like, I'm not even necessarily sure we would see her in the costume in this, but we'll see her as sort of an adventurous kid.
I liked the Thor book.
Teenager?
It was good. Right now, she's sort of a young. She, like, I don't know. The art looks makes she's her younger, maybe yeah. look a little
the,
younger.
The
than
art
that.
By Ray Dillon is really good.
Oh, it's yeah. gorgeous.
Yeah.
She looks like about nine.
She's yeah, Paradise Island, Themyscira, and so it'll be like adventures and monsters and stuff. On
but
there.
Was it George Perez who named Themyscira?
You know, it could have been. I don't know if it actually had.
I don't think he was doing any favors. I think Paradise Island is easier.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think that was scary.
I think we have to thank Perez for a lot of Wonder Woman lore.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got, Nick?
The zero issue of Boom's new Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
And you said you liked this a bit, right?
I actually really did. I will probably continue to read it. This is actually written by Kyle Higgins, so he's worked with Scott Snyder a little yeah. bit on Batman mm-hmm. stuff. Art by Hendry Prastieta. Uh-huh. I don't know, but his art is really nice. Hmm. It's very sort of realistic in its approach, but it captures sort of the giant robot fights and the Sentai battles and all that other stuff.
I was flipping through it, and Power Rangers was after my time, so I don't have any fondness for it. But I thought it struck what little I know about it is it looked like it hit a good balance between the kind of like. You know, it's not like a grim and gritty revamp or something like
no.
that. But it takes it seriously enough that it's not like this completely light and airy.
Right,
thing.
And it right. actually takes place at a certain period of time, like right when the Green Ranger sort of occurs. So sort of,
I know people love the Green Ranger.
Sort of after his turning from villain to hero.
Yep.
And it's sort of in that kind of limelight right afterwards. So it's some interesting stuff.
So what you would say is that people who are fans of Power Rangers should probably look at this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And then I've got the ninth issue of Secret Wars, which the finale was great. The third issue of All New X-Men. The second issue of Batman Ninja Turtles.
I saw he was overtly fighting the turtles in that, and that seemed pretty cool.
Yep.
Third issue of Black Knight. And then the fourth issue of Spider-Gwen, which I've been really enjoying.
All right, Dave?
Let's see. I think I've only got a handful that y'all haven't mentioned. There's an unusual book called Spirit Leaves from a smaller press company called Chapter House Comics. I'm not even quite sure what to make of this one yet. It's sort of a fantasy adventure that looks like Steven Universe meets Zelda. You know, but I feel like people who like kind of quirky fantasy stuff or have Zelda fondness or anything like that should take a peek at it, if only for the artwork. There's the third issue of Illuminati, the supervillain book from Marvel. And lastly, I think everything, y'all mentioned almost everything else, but there's a Red Sonja book that normally wouldn't hit my radar, but they are doing revamps of all of their kind of like, usually kind of hottied up female characters in
Red Sonja, Vampirella.
Somewhat more thoughtful revamps. And what I got skimming through this was surprisingly good. It was an interesting new take on the character and pretty approachable. So, anyway, that's it for me.
All right. That wraps up comics for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and books and video games. Okay, so there's a new Netflix show, which is almost always true. I feel like they're putting one out every week now.
It's very kind of true. It's a little hard to keep up with.
But their newest one is a 10-part series?
Was it 10 parts? Yes, 10 parts.
Making a Murderer, which is a documentary that is about a Wisconsin man who...
Yeah, his name is Stephen Avery.
Stephen Avery, who was jailed for 18 years for a rape that he was acquitted of by genetic evidence. He got out, and then he went back in for another crime that he may not have committed.
Correct.
So, Dave, you've seen the first episode of this, which is mostly about the original crime and the setup.
Right, and also sort of like the weird kind of politics of the small town.
And the pretty obvious corruption of their sheriff's department.
Yeah, rivalries, and, you know, this guy came from, like, a family that was basically considered, like, the no-good family.
Yeah. And then Nick and I, we watched the rest of it.
Yeah, I think it was sort of one of those things that Kaylee had been, my wife had been hearing a lot of people at work talking about it. She was like, let's power through it, let's watch it, because I tried watching the first episode, it didn't work. And I was like, sure, let's give it a shot. And we ended up watching about 7 episodes in a row.
Wow.
And then we finished it up the next night.
Did you drink a lot? Because that's a really that's a harsh 7 hours to get through.
Like some moonshine.
It's a little dark. You know, it's one of those things where you get to the end of the episode and you're like, they always ended on a big note. Like,
yeah, yeah.
such and such, and then this happened, and then this happened, or somebody went to jail, or, you know, it's like...
This is a little bit how the... This is reminding me at least a little bit of the Serial.
Yeah, this is definitely Netflix's Serial.
So you basically, okay, I need to watch it, see what happens next.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the clock and it's 2:30 in the morning, and you're like, I should probably go to bed because I have to get up in like 3 hours.
Yeah, this thing wrecked my New Year's resolution for bedtime, just like Battlefront did.
But it's very compelling television.
It is. But we're not going to go too far into spoilers. There's some. If you want to go in untouched, skip ahead about 10 minutes, and we'll cover it. But we're going to light on spoilers. But there are a couple things you may. So what I think is interesting is in watching this in Serial. I felt bad for Adnan, and I am fairly certain, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm on the outside observer, but I really felt like Adnan didn't do it.
Right.
I feel like he got framed, more or less, and that the cops didn't do their job, and they wrecked this poor, innocent kid's life.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that was Stephen Avery. I'm not 100% sure he did it, but even if he didn't, he's not a good guy. This is a guy who covered his cat in gasoline and set it on fire.
Yeah, I mean...
And they downplay that in the... This, okay, here's the thing. The documentary...
They actually threw him into the fireplace.
That is not what happened.
Really?
The documentary crew was embedded with the family for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Like, they got out of college, and this is what they went to do for 10 years, was videotape and document this case.
Long-ass documentary.
But the bias is going to be with the family. That's where they were. That's who. That's whose point of view they were taking.
Right.
So this is advocacy journalism the same way that Serial is.
Yeah.
And there's many articles online about... The stuff that they sort of downplayed or didn't even mention about what makes Avery look much more guilty.
Yeah.
They sort of downplayed that.
Well, just in the first episode alone, they mentioned that he ran off the road who was the lady?
It was like his cousin or something?
I think it was his cousin.
But it's like the sheriff's wife.
The sheriff's wife or something, yeah.
Big mistake on his part, but he like ran her off the road because she had just been spreading some rumors about him.
Yeah.
And scared her with a shotgun, which was allegedly not loaded, but who knows?
Yeah, and the thing is, this guy's, he's got a really low IQ. He's not very smart.
Yeah, IQ of 70.
But he's smarter than his poor nephew.
Yeah, Brendan, you just feel awful for
him. I do. And the thing is, I'm not 100% sure Brendan didn't do it either, because I think Brendan could be talked into anything.
Yeah.
But when they show him being interviewed by the detectives, he clearly is just saying whatever they'll say to you because they believes that...
Well, he believes that he's... Am I going to go to prison?
He thinks he's going to get away.
He says, am I going to go to prison for one day?
Yeah.
And do I get to go home and play video games?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where it's like... He does not have the mental capacity to sort of understand the problems that he's being.
And the public defender they get him, maybe. And there's a lot of scummy people in
this. Oh, the public defender that they get him is outright awful.
He's probably the most scummy of all the people in here, and I'm counting Stephen Avery in that group.
Well, maybe more so that lawyer's sort of
his investigator.
Henchman, the investigator.
No, the lawyer's worse. But the lawyer is basically, he's not advocating for him. He's just trying to help out the state's case with Avery.
Yeah.
And he's basically working with the cops against his client. It's messed up.
It's one of those things where you don't know exactly. You're not going to know 100% sure what happens to anything.
No.
But it's an interesting sort of exercise.
Which also reflects Serial again, where even the host of the show acknowledged in the final episode of it, although there were some big revelations and stuff, that she was still not 100% sure one way or the other.
Yeah, you can't be sure, but what you can be sure looking at all this and just the evidence they present is that there's definitely the justice system failed everybody here.
Yeah, I agree with you that Stephen Avery does not look good.
No.
But I can't with 100% certainty say he was the culprit behind it.
They did not make their case. They didn't convince they had to plant evidence, clearly.
Oh god, some of the sheriff department just like, what?
They were supposed to not.
No sense.
They were supposed to not be involved at all, and they didn't. They didn't avoid
that. It's kind of a small town problem.
Yes, that it's a corrupt, but it's not small town. It's a big enough town. These guys.
I love that they were all biased. They're like, oh, we'll host it in the next town over.
Yeah,
fine. And I'm like, but these guys are buddies with.
Yeah. Everyone. Well, and then they didn't even do that. They didn't even avoid the. They didn't avoid the appearance of impropriety. No. They didn't even bother with that.
No,
it's messed up, but it's compelling TV.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's one of those shows that I'm not a big documentary guy. I never have.
Me neither.
But I got into this, and I was compelled. I wanted to watch an episode after I wanted to sort of see where all of the chips fell down.
Yeah,
and it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating series. It is one of those. My wife won't watch it. She got frustrated enough with Serial that she doesn't want to watch it, and I understand that. I think if you get frustrated by Serial, if the failures of the justice system are that frustrating, this will drive you crazy.
Yeah, because it is frustrating. I will say,
but it's also fascinating.
It is,
and it's as it has been advocacy journalism. It's a pretty well put together piece. Turning to something completely different. We talked about this a little bit. I think the novel, the Star Wars Before the Awakening.
Well, there's a couple of different novels.
There's a bunch
right now, but
one in particular,
because I think our staffer Amanda was talking about sort of a backstory for one of the stormtroopers that showed up. The one who has been labeled traitor,
right?
Yeah,
even though he's really the guy who hates traitors.
That's true. He really hates traitors.
But this is a book called Star Wars Before the Awakening. It's written by Greg Rucka, you might know as the guy who wrote the Shattered Empire comic.
And does it have some artwork by Phil Noto?
And Phil Noto does some art piece with throughout. There's like a piece before each story, and then there's a couple pieces in there. But basically, this is three short stories in one book. It starts off with Finn, then Rey, then Poe, and it sort of does their origin story more or less. Like, without giving too much away, Finn's story is about him as a stormtrooper and his training and all that kind of stuff. And it's really interesting stuff. It really fleshes out some of the developments.
Idea of knowing that kind of like, what do you do as a stormtrooper?
And Rey's story is about her, like a big find as a scavenger and her sort of big hope of maybe getting off planet and some other people and how she interacted with the other junk dealers. And it's really interesting. And then Poe's story is my favorite because Poe's parents are the ones from the comic book that Rucka wrote, where one's a badass Pathfinder commando. He's one of Han Solo's commandos. The other one is an awesome A-wing pilot. And that sort of explains where Poe got his piloting skills and all his skills, that his dad was a commando and his mom was a pilot. And he's been in A-Wing since he was like 6 years old. And this explores Poe's transition from sort of a Republic fighter to a member of the Resistance. And in so doing, delineates the Republic and Resistance a little more than the movie did. Yeah. There's a lot of little backstory nods and little things that like clarify things. And I didn't find the movie at all unclear, but seeing this stuff explored was really interesting.
Yeah, the Star Wars movies have always kind of been about the broad strokes.
Yeah.
But I do agree, even within that, there's some things that could have been fleshed out a little bit more. So I can see the appeal on these. And, you know, you mentioned Rucka. I think probably people know he's a comic writer, too.
Yeah.
But specifically, he's a novelist as well.
He started as a novelist.
He kind of does, like, sort of does thrillers, I would say. And mysteries. And, but, you know, specifically the book that we have often advocated for, Lazarus.
Yeah.
And also Gotham Central some years ago.
Queen and Country.
These are all the books he's known for. So he's got a big old pedigree. Yeah.
Well, and he's known for doing strong character work and strong female character work.
Yep.
Which, interestingly, his Rey story is probably my least favorite of the three. And it's not that it's bad. It's just that I found the Poe and the Finn stories more interesting.
I would have never have pegged him, though, as being a super fan of Star Wars.
You know, Rucka's got some geek cred. Rucka's a gamer.
No, I know. I mean, and he's writing, the Dragon Age book right now?
Yeah.
He's writing.
Yeah.
Usually seem like a... Prior to this and Star Wars and that, I would have said he's kind of a non-commercial guy.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed him either.
No, me neither. Well, it's kind of like when Brian Wood was doing Star Wars.
Yeah.
Not what you would have seen, but I think Star Wars gets to everybody in our age group at all.
Yeah.
Finally, there's a video game that I got. It was a Kickstarter, and I'm not sure if it's available for purchase yet or not, but it's called Amplitude. Have you guys ever played this?
Nope.
It's Harmonix, the same people who do Rock Band. And the conceit of it is that you're in this nanobot inside someone's sort of Fantasy Voyage style inside someone's body. You're trying to repair their brain, their neural pathways. And the way you do that is a rhythm game where you're connecting different tracks of songs.
Hmm.
And they're all electronica songs. And you have little blaster ships. You go and you sort of play the notes on a drum tracks and synthesizer tracks and vocal tracks and all this kind of thing. And it's got the same rhythm. You know, you hit the buttons and that kind of thing. But what's interesting is it's multiplayer. You can play online or with up to four people in the same room.
Okay.
And the music is all original music by Harmonix. And it's really fun. If you like Rock Band, especially like the Rock Band that they had that was like the arcade-y version they did, that was like you played it with the controller instead of the instruments.
Right.
This is a remake of a game that they did. Amplitude was an older game they did for like PS2. And this is the next-gen console version. And the Kickstarter code I had works for both PS3 and PS4, so I've got them both.
So is it Kickstarter for a PS...
For
a PlayStation?
For a video game, yeah. Happens all the time.
That's weird. I don't think I've been very aware of that. Actually, I guess those the Double Fine guys, I remember those two guys doing a game a few years ago. Interesting, though.
Yeah, but yeah, if you're a Rock Band fan at all, if you like rhythm games, this is a really fun game. My son really likes it.
Now, is it available for purchase, or do you download it?
It's a downloaded game. I don't know if it's in the PlayStation Store yet, but it will be soon.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds kind of cool. I wouldn't mind checking that out, or at least if there's a demo or something, trying it out.
Yeah. All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week, and until that time,
Yo-jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.